Well, I think we can begin. First of all, are there any questions? I didn't leave you time for questions at the end of the last session. Are there any questions about anything we dealt with in connection with De Tocqueville? Have you been reading De Tocqueville? And are you finding him interesting reading? Now, I have assigned you the key portions in terms of what we are going to be studying in these sessions. You'll be reading much more in the second book, but that doesn't mean you don't have to read the rest for your own satisfaction, because De Tocqueville is good reading. So sometime at your convenience, when the course is finished perhaps, you can pick up and read all of De Tocqueville, and you'll find him a gold mine of very interesting comments and observations. Now, we're going to pick up one of the strands of thought that De Tocqueville mentioned. We will deal with it again briefly next week. Remember, I quoted De Tocqueville as saying, society governs itself for itself. Nothing is more striking to a European traveler in the United States than the absence of what we term government or the administration. We cannot understand early America apart from this fact. De Tocqueville recognized that the real government of the United States was not what was called a government. It was what he termed private association. Private association. Now, what were these private associations? They were tied agents, which were created by people to deal with a variety of problems. These tithe associations were formed by the people for just almost any problem that appealed to them. Any idea, any concept, any cause that struck their fancy. There were literally hundreds and thousands of them. For example, one very early traveler in the United States, Attila Marat, the elder son of Joaquin Marat, who was king of Naples under Napoleon, and as a boy was a crown prince, wrote a very critical work about the religions of America in the course of this discussion on America. And he said, the great number of religious societies existing in the United States is truly surprising. There are some of them for everything. For instance, societies to distribute the Bible, to distribute tracts, to encourage religious journals, to convert, civilize, educate the savages, to marry the preachers, to take care of their widows and orphans, to preach, extend, preserve, reform, purify the faith, to build chapels, endow congregations, support seminaries, catechize and convert sailors, Negroes, and loose women, to secure the observance of Sunday, prevent blasphemy by prosecuting the violators, to establish Sunday schools where young ladies teach reading and the catechism to little rogues, male and female, to prevent drunkenness, and so on. And he goes on to ridicule the idea of societies being created to deal with every problem under the sun. Now, for Marat, it was a joke, but in reality, it was the real government of America. Monday, when I was at Roanoke, speaking to a ministerial group there, I told them what tied agencies did in early America and the involuntary association for tied agencies. And I cited the example of Salem, Massachusetts. In 1795, Salem had approximately 2,500 people. Just a small town. In 1845, 15 years later, it had a population of 45,000. Now that, of course, is a considerable multiplication. It meant that every few years, Salem doubled and redoubled its population. From a small Puritan village, it had become a small-sized city. And yet its character had not basically changed. How, with all these foreigners pouring in, had they been able to keep Salem basically with the same kind of Puritan character? Well, Salem was doing what every community across the United States was doing. They were organizing society, sometimes calling a pastor or a layman to be their officer, established Sunday schools to teach immigrants, establishing churches for immigrants, Christian schools to teach immigrant children, special schools to teach at night the immigrants English to help Americanize them, prepare them for life here. Special training sessions to teach the immigrant wives homemaking in America, how to can food, how to use the kinds of foods that are available in America, many of which they didn't know anything about. Chapels as points of evangelism for sailors. Tract societies, Bible societies, societies to evangelize particular groups of immigrants, societies do any number of things. You can hardly begin to imagine the endless variety of societies that were provided. In fact, I ran across one once. This was with regard to England, where this same kind of movement spread, a society to provide trusses for indigent and injured working men. Now, that sounds ridiculous, but if you were a poor working man who was laid up and there was some group to provide you with a truss so that you could go back to work, you'd be pretty grateful. What it meant was that Christian people were saying, anytime there is any kind of a need we can imagine, we're going to try to meet that need. So that in every community there were literally hundreds of groups and organizations ranging from a handful of women to a great number of men and women who were dedicated to ministering to a particular cause. And a lot of time and money and effort was going into that cause. You cannot understand American history of the last century apart from these groups. Now consider one fact alone. A vast number of the immigrants who came to this country were Catholic. These tithe agencies, because they ministered to them, maybe it was just teaching them English, or maybe job training, or maybe education for their children, and they immediately had a rapport with them, and large numbers of them became Protestants. The Irish potato famine, for example, brought boatload after boatload after boatload of Irishmen. A tremendous wave of Irish immigration to the United States. I was very interested not too long ago to read a very interesting analysis by a brilliant Catholic priest and sociologist in which he pointed out the overwhelming majority of Irishmen in the United States are Protestants. A very large percentage of them, Presbyterians. How did that happen? You don't think of Irishmen as Protestants. But most of them in this country are Protestants. Simply because of the tithe issue. So that you can see what a tremendous impact they were making on the country from one end to the other. Moreover, what this did do was to establish as a basis of operation the voluntary principle, so that the people of this country felt if there is a problem, we can take care of it. And as a result, nowhere in the world did the Red Cross take off to a greater extent than the United States. Now, the Red Cross happened to get its start in Switzerland under a man named Dumont. But it very quickly spread all over the world, and it got its greatest start in this country. During Cleveland's administration, there was, I believe, a flood in the Midwest or South, and someone proposed that Congress pass a relief measure to take care of the people. And Cleveland refused. He said, we've always taken care of it as a people out of our own resources voluntarily. It'll be a sad day for the United States when the people don't take care of it by themselves, and the federal government or the state government has to step in and do it. Things have changed a little bit since then, have they not? But when you realize that all the relief agencies that minister to every kind of situation that arose in this country, and then to every need that arose all over the world, you realize what a tremendous factor the voluntary giving of Americans was. In fact, every cause of every needy group all over the world found its sympathetic friends in the United States. Was it, say, Hungarians who were trying to overthrow the Habsburgs? They would come over to the United States. That's the hat around. Very sure that because Americans loved freedom, they were going to be for the Hungarians who wanted to be free. But the Jews who are being oppressed by the Tsar, well, again, they could be sure that nowhere in the world were they going to find more sympathy and help than in the United States. The amount of relief money that flowed out of the United States all over the world was enormous. The amount of missionary money that went out from the United States all over the world through one denomination or another was again a tremendous factor. The missionary movement of the last century, as it developed out of the Protestant countries, especially out of the United States, and continued up until World War II to be a very powerful factor, it has faded since then to a great extent, is one of the most remarkable things in the world. It created more schools, did more to educate various parts of the world than most Americans realize. American ideas, American educational standards, American traditions were carried all over the world. We had, as a result, a vast reservoir of goodwill all over the world, which we have unfortunately abused by getting involved in world politics. We had a tremendous reputation as the hope of the world, a country that was ready to help every other people in time of need and did so. And at the same time, we were doing so much within our own borders to an unbelievable degree. What this meant then was that the real government of the United States was not what we think of as government. Today, when we say government, we think of Washington or the State House or something like that. Now, as the college students know, because they've undoubtedly read my This Independent Republic and some of my other things, when you go back to the colonial period, the people in that area, when you said era, did not, when you used the word government, think of the State House. For them, government meant, first of all, the self-government of the Christian man. That was the basic government. Then second, it meant the family. The family is the basic government of every man. It's the first government you're born into. Your parents, believe me, govern you. You govern your parents. The family is the first government, the first church, the first school. It's the first society of every man. It's a very real government. Then third, there was the church. The church is a government. Then fourth, there was your work. Your work governs you. Believe me, if you doubt that it's a government, just think about when you're going to get up in the morning. You're governed. You have to get up at a set time because your job requires you. You do certain things because your job requires you. That's government. Your work governs you. Then five, there are the government exercised by society. The group you live amongst. Very important aspect of government. After all, you're not likely to go, say, to a meeting or a dinner party dressed in Levi's and without a tie, if you figure everybody is going to go there formal. You might like to go that way, but you go the way you are expected to go. I recall some years ago in California, this very prominent Philadelphia minister was out there speaking at a conference. Kind of a bumptious character. At any rate, he thought since it was California way out west, it wasn't going to be formal as things were in Philadelphia. So he started to go into this dinner meeting at the conference grounds to speak in slacks and a loud sport shirt. And he happened to look in, and everybody who was there with tie and coat and so on. So he ducked out, hurried back, changed, and then came in. He was being governed. I think I can tell you a favorite story of mine about the same sort of thing. Some years ago, I knew and met and talked a while with an Irish Presbyterian pastor. He was in California visiting at the time. And he said that his sister in California had sent him a very fine wool shirt, a Pendleton shirt. And he was delighted with it. It was a present for him for his birthday. And he thought, this is ideal. I'm going into the football match at Belfast tomorrow. Football match for them is what we would call soccer. It's a big game for them there. And I'll be good and warm in this. Well, in Ireland, of course, all the Protestant clergy were clericals with a clerical collar and all. So the next day he went down in this checked wool sport shirt, the railroad station, took the commute train into Belfast, enjoyed the football game, was good and warm, felt wonderful, thought the Americans really have some good ideas about clothes, and came back and found his wife and daughter in tears. Why? Well, half the town had seen him go to the railroad station and rumors were racing all through town that Domini is up to no good. The deacon of the Belfast disguised as anything but a man of the cloth, like some racy American. Now, you can be sure he's not up to any good. Maybe he's even going into a house of ill fame. So his wife and daughter were reduced to tears by the time he got home. Well, he was so horrified by the incident, he put the shirt in the closet, and he said he didn't even have the nerve to put it on around the house. And he said, I brought it here with me to America, because I figured I could wear it here. But he said, you know, when I put it on once here, I felt as though I were going to go out and sin or something. So I've taken it off and put it in my suitcase again. Now, that's government. The government of the society around us. We are all governed by our society. So it's a very important aspect of government, even though society doesn't pass some rules and say, now, if you do thus and so, we're going to penalize you. So the penalties are there if you break the society. And there are other forms of government that we are all a part of, but then let's put down the state. What they call civil government. The only time the Puritans, for example, were talking about what we call government was when they said civil government. Apart from that, it was not to be considered as anything but one of these. Self-government, or the family, or something of the like. Well, it was in this area society, you see, because he told us that society governs itself. How? It creates all kinds of voluntary agencies and institutions which in one way or another effectively govern everybody. They reach out into one area of life after another and they minister every need. Society governs itself for itself. Nothing is more striking to a European traveler in the United States than the absence of what we term government or the administration. Now, it is when society ceases to govern itself, you see, that the state begins to take over. And the basic government, as it existed then, and de Tocqueville wasn't here long enough to know, was connected with the church. The church was creating, Christians were creating, in connection with the church, all kinds of voluntary associations. This is why, and here we're dealing less with history, but with the conclusions we need to draw from history, wherein does our future lie? Precisely in doing the same sort of thing again. After all, social financing is an inescapable fact. And voluntary agencies don't provide social financing for health, education, and welfare. The government is going to do it, is it not? This is why, in terms of Scripture, the tithe is so important. Because it is through the tithe that you minister to these various areas of life. You create agencies and institutions. And, of course, this is what our organization, CalSeton, is trying to do through its work. It is trying to create, to revive, the effectiveness of the tithe so that Christians will begin to see their responsibility again to create voluntary associations and again to take over the basic government of society. If social financing is not provided for by people voluntarily, the state is going to provide it. This is where the conservatives are way off base. They talk about eliminating taxes, wiping out all these welfare grants and so on and so forth. But what's going to happen then? There always are new. Now they're going to be met illegitimately. They're going to be met with padded welfare rolls, with padded relief rolls, with padded health rolls for those who are needy and indigent. This is going to be a vast boondoggle as long as the government does it. But when Christian people do it through voluntary association, it's a different thing. Somebody's got to do it. When it's done legitimately, it can be done honestly as well. This is our problem. As the voluntary associations that the Tocquevilles were describing began to wane and disappear, civil governments began to pick them up and take over one function after another. But as civil government took it over, there was always corruption with it. Whereas here, there were sometimes some groups that were corrupt, and if they were, everybody put it into them. That was their end. If you're giving on a voluntary basis to me, you see, and you feel that I'm misusing the funds, you quit giving, and that's the end of my work. But you can't quit giving to the state. It has a taxing power, and I don't. The only way I can raise money for Calcedon is to sell my services to you in such a way that you feel he's providing ideas. The same way this school survives, because it sells to the parents a product they like. We're both rendering the service. We are, in a form, voluntary aid associations. We are an aspect of society governing itself, providing schools, providing ideas, without taxation. And we are both subject to the marketplace. We either deliver or we've had it. Now, this was the all-important factor in de Tocqueville's analysis that many people miss. Now, de Tocqueville did not take time to go into all these associations. In fact, he didn't really know much about them. All he knew was that they existed. Now, he went on to say, there are two methods of diminishing the force of authority in a nation. The first is to weaken the supreme power in its very principles by forbidding or preventing society from acting in its own defense under certain circumstances. To weaken authority in this manner is what is generally termed in Europe, lay the foundations of freedom. The second manner of diminishing the influence of authority does not consist in stripping society of any of its rights, nor in paralyzing its efforts, but in distributing the exercise of its privileges among various hands, and in multiplying functionaries, each of whom the degree of power necessary for him to perform his duty is entrusted. There may be nations whom this distribution of social powers might lead to anarchy, but in itself it is not anarchical. The action of authority is indeed thus rendered less irresistible and less perilous, but it is not totally suppressed. The revolution of the United States was the result of a mature and deliberate taste for freedom, not of a vague or ill-defined craving for independence. It contracted no alliance with the turbulent passions of anarchy, but its course was marked on the contrast by an attachment to whatever was lawful and orderly. It was never assumed in the United States that a citizen of a free country has the right to do whatever he pleases. That's what you hear today, isn't it? On the contrary, social obligations were there imposed upon him more various than anywhere else. No idea was ever entertained of attacking the principles or of contesting the rights of society. but the exercise of authority was divided, to the end that the office might be powerful and the officer insignificant, and that the community should be at once regulated and free. In no country in the world does the law hold so absolute a language as in America, and in no country is the right of applying it vested in so many hands. The administrative power in the United States presents nothing either central or hierarchical in its constitution which accounts for its passing unperceived. The power exists, but its representative is not to be discerned. A very telling passage. De Tocqueville makes clear that precisely because of this kind of thing, there is more authority in the United States. It's spread out. The citizen, instead of being free to do what he pleases, is not free. He has more obligations. This is a different kind of freedom. It is a responsible freedom. Do you know the idea that freedom is the right to do what you please? Better applies to Cuba today and to the Soviet Union. Why? Because in that irresponsible sense, what is life like there? You earn money, but you can't buy many clothes with it. You stand in line to buy food and a pair of shoes. So, what do you do with your money? Well, you can use it on pleasure. Life in Cuba, it is said, is a perpetual fiesta, according to Dr. Hans Sells. Why? Well, the people are making money, so you don't want them to be unhappy because they can't get new shoes or new clothes or good food. So you make sure that there's always a fiesta, always cultural activities. So you can do as you please. Live it up. Have a good time. Entertainment is the big industry. Every little town in the Soviet Union has its opera house, its cultural center. What is there to spend money on for but amusement, culture? And so it is, the growth industry in the United States is entertainment. The more freedom is taken away from them to be responsible, the more freedom is given to them to be irresponsible, to do as they please in an irresponsible sense. As a result, the decline of the voluntary association was marked by a decline of personal responsibility, of self-government. As the idea of self-government as the basic government of man declined, the voluntary associations declined, and there were fewer and fewer agencies to take care of the various things. We still have more than most countries. We still, for example, minister to children all over the world. We have various relief funds for children. We maintain orphanages in Korea and Vietnam and elsewhere. And we, to a great extent, were responsible for alleviating a great deal of the famine in Africa this summer when famine conditions were so prevalent there. So that we are, to a great extent, still very heavily under the influence of voluntary association. But what we do today is a shadow compared to what was a century and a half ago. It was then the real government of the United States. You know, the anarchists from the campuses today talk about abolishing all government. Well, we were as close to that as any people ever could be. We had so little government that it was next to none. It was in the hands of people through voluntary association. And it is never going to return to that kind of thing until you have again the self-government of a Christian man. and his willingness to tithe, his willingness to give. Are there any questions now? Yes. Yes. We shall be dealing with this very soon. I think we'll get to it tomorrow night. But you're pointing in the right direction. It was one of the most tragic aspects of American history that this arrangement, unique in history, has disappeared. We've only touched the surface tonight. Well, we've touched more of it than the surface. We've touched half of it, very important half of it. And we will next consider, tomorrow night almost certainly, the other half of this story, how this came about, how it was maintained. We still have the fundamental principles with us. They're very important. Any other questions? Yes.
One thing is how this society, the government of the society, certainly the Christians must break with this as it now exists to establish the policy of Christianity and the government. So, I think you said that the governing authority of society is not absolute.
No, of course it is not. You always need the state for the criminal. You see. Yes. Incidentally, I forgot one very important one. The school. The school is a very important governing agency in your life for many years. Yes, excuse me. Please continue.
Well, I was just saying that or a Christian becomes a criminal in the state, in the eyes of the state, as it now exists.
Mm-hmm.
And the Christian then becomes at odds with the governing authority. It's kind of hard to say which one of these he's not at odds with.
Yes, he's at odds with the whole thing.
Right.
He's in war with everything.
Virtually every. That it would not be, none of these would be absolute, it would just be an accumulation of all.
Yes. No, you don't absolutize anything except God. Yes.
How do you see the United Pilots shared with the charitable entity called the United Final as leading to the voluntary association?
Could you repeat that again?
The country being taught by the United States.
Yeah.
The United States. The modern should argue that this is a voluntary association. You comment on that?
Yes. The United Funds, in a sense, are a product of this background, but they are also a product of the state trying to control this tradition. So I'm not altogether happy with the United Funds because they are trying to take over to too great an extent and say the only good voluntary associations are the ones who are within our circle. Now, in Los Angeles County, we have this problem in a particularly acute way, both good and bad. Some few years ago, because there were some fraudulent groups, some medical groups, and by medical I mean not formed by doctors, but for medical causes, to relieve this or that type of disease and raising funds for this disease and that disease, and many of them were fraudulent. And maybe they would raise several million, and maybe 100,000 or 200,000 would go to the cause that they were talking about. This was true for a long time of Christian Fields. A vast amount of money was being raised, supposedly, in the earlier days to deal with tuberculosis. A small portion of it, finally, they found out, was actually going to deal with TV. Since then, apparently, they've had a cleanup in the organization. But it did, for a time, become very bureaucracy-rich, and it was a good rocket for a good many people. Well, what L.A. County, Los Angeles County, did was to say, we are going to set up a commission to investigate every one of these associations that makes a deal within the county, to see how much money is actually going to the cause they profess, and how much is going for administration and for publicity, for promotion and the like. And they were giving very excellent reports on all these organizations, so that at any time you could ask for a report on the Heart Fund, or on the March of Dimes, or on Christmas Deals, anything. You would be told exactly where every penny collected across the United States or in L.A. County was going. So it was a tremendous asset in that you had a very healthy check on these organizations. But it does lead to a danger, because it's a state commission doing this. And when you're protecting people against themselves, you take away a certain amount of responsibility from people. That's the essence of socialism. You protect people against themselves, against their own ignorance or folly or sin. So the State Commission wants now increasingly to tell any organization, whether it's the Christian one or otherwise, that's going to make a public appeal for funds, that, well, let us see your books, your organization, and we will tell you whether we will approve it or not. And you have pages and pages of questionnaires to fill out before they approve of you or not, even apart from your financial structures. So this becomes a kind of a governing system. Well, now CalPeace is a tax-exempt organization, and it has no administrative expenses because we don't even have an office. Just have three scholars full-time and a number of others part-time writing and lecturing and whatnot. But I wouldn't submit anything to them. When one or two people who are ready on a payroll deduction basis to give a little bit to us each month. Because what they are in effect saying was, we're going to determine whether you're a valid institution or not, apart from your financing. So you tell us all about yourself and allow us to be the judge of what kind of an organization you are. You see, it can, the United Crusade or the United Fund, whichever name they give, can create some serious problems. Now, in some places, I may be wrong on this, so don't take my word for it. I think Salvation Army has pulled out because they got unhappy. I do know that a Salvation Army person a few years ago, an officer, told me they were thinking of doing this, because they were unhappy with the kind of supervision and government that was beginning to creep in. So it does have perils. Any other questions? We have time for one or two more. Well, if not, we can call ourselves adjourned now.